In Orlando, Florida, Dawn Drost reports from America, and she is Bondi Tunes International.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet, now!
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, where we're coming into autumn, and boy, can you tell it! Outside my window, it's pouring rain. I'm joined by one of our North America correspondents, Dawn Drost, in Orlando, Florida. Dawn, welcome back.
Hi. It is wonderful to be here.
How are things in the wonderful United States of America?
Well, in my particular neck of the woods, it's hot. It's already getting hot because it's spring, and spring in Florida, well, we don't really have spring. We just have hotter. And
I was going to say, you don't
maybe
get
maybe 3 or 4 days of, oh, it's cold.
It doesn't really get cold, does it?
No.
And you've got the ex-prime minister. Is he still in Lago or whatever that place is called?
Yes. Trump, the ex-president, yes, he's still in Mar-a-Lago. I don't think he's leaving. I think he's just sitting there pouting largely. People come to him for some reason. All of the Republicans, when they want to talk and whine, they fly down to him and meet with him at his little compound.
Maybe they need his wisdom. Ha, ha. Okay, this is an interesting story that I found on, I think it's CBS in America, and the headline is "Doorbell video captures moment an aeroplane crashed into a car near Miami." This video footage is quite confronting, isn't it?
It looked very tragic and sad. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I heard some very strange, like, boop, boop, on my end.
That's technology for you.
Yes, delightful. That a single-engine plane crashed on a street in Pembroke Pines, which is down about 20 minutes outside of Miami. And it crashed at the end of a street, and unfortunately there were 4 passengers in the plane. 2 of them died in the crash. And a woman and her child were taken out, but they are injured. And there's no other information known about them at this time. But yep. the crash was captured on a doorbell camera, and it looks like probably the engine just failed. It truly looks like it just fell out of the sky.
Yeah, it's very tragic when that happens.
Terrible.
You talked about the woman and a baby. Was that on the ground?
Yes. No, they were in the plane.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
They survived in the plane.
You just don't know what's going to happen in life, do you?
No. And it is scary to see. I've worked for an airline for a while in Sacramento. And I was the ground security coordinator, along with being the station trainer. We had to go to a simulated training exercise with all of the airlines that the airport did of what we would happen if we had a plane crash. And they actually had simulated a crash, and we had to watch video that they had mocked up of a plane crashing, and it was quite scary. So it is something to see, and they went through all of the different things that could fail in a plane, from just an engine and birds getting an engine off is a big problem. And right now there are some of the migrations that are occurring, and all it takes is one bird to get in, and that actually can cause a plane crash.
I don't fear flying at all, as long as it's a jumbo 747 or a big plane, but small planes would worry me, you know.
I've been in one that they called a puddle jumper, a very small plane that only sat about 30 people. I was not comfortable with that at all. It was a propeller plane. Like that. It was quite terrifying. I love air travel. I really do enjoy it. I'm mystified by it. I that and space travel, just being able to get up into the sky, I just think it's fascinating.
Would you put the money up to be on Elon Musk? I think it's him who's organizing along. I think he's in partnership with NASA, actually. I know he's putting satellites up so people can get satellite reception on the internet anywhere on the planet, including, dear friends listening in Australia, in the middle of our deserts, which I think is a fantastic thing, but I'm going off the point there. Would you be a passenger as, you know, in on the first flight leaving Earth's atmosphere? If you had the
money.
Not
the first.
You want to be the second.
Not the first. I would like to be sure it works first.
Yeah.
but if I could afford it, I would certainly do it. I would, because I think it would be magnificent to get to see
you know what?
Earth from that perspective.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine anything more magnificent than to be able to see, look down and see the countries and see the ocean from above. And,
but not the first.
And the stars. And I don't think I'd want to be the first. I want to be sure all the bugs are worked out. Although he is wonderful about how much testing he does. And he gets excited when his prototypes blow up.
Yeah.
He does because he says that's the he knows that there's something that has to he said you can't learn without failure, because then you know what's wrong. And he said he'd rather things fail now than when there's passengers or expensive packages, you know, when there's parcels that have to get up to the space station, you know, payloads that, you know, he said let it fail now so that we can fix it and perfect it. And I'm glad to see that kind of attitude before people start paying money. So maybe,
Dawn Drost, you would like to be the second.
Yes, I would be fine with that.
Buzz Aldrin was interviewed at one stage, I don't know when, and he was asked what, you know, his greatest regret in life was, and he said it was the fact that he was the second man on the moon and not the first. A lot of people want to be the first because they can say to their children and their grandchildren, hey, I was the first person to go into space, you know?
No. I don't have to be the first. And I think just being able to say, if you'd have the opportunity to do something like that, I don't think it matters if you're the first or the 50th. If you have the chance to have an experience like that, you should just embrace it and appreciate it and not get so hung up. It shouldn't be a regret that you, honestly, I've always thought Buzz Aldrin was kind of a jerk anyway. he always seemed like an egomaniac, but the fact that
well, that's why he wanted to be the first.
He went to the moon. Come on, you were on the moon.
Isn't that enough already?
How many people can say that? You've been on the moon. No, but how many people can say that? Why do you care that you weren't the first one to step out? Your footprints are on the moon. Very few people's footprints will ever be on the moon.
This is true.
Get a grip.
Yeah, get a hold of yourself, Buzz.
Get that your footprints are on the moon. Get over it. That's not... That to me is just like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
I wonder, does he have arguments with Neil Armstrong, you know, like, hey dude, drinking a beer in a pub, hey dude, I was the one who's supposed to do that first, you know what I'm saying?
That
was 1969 when they were young.
Because we had one of our senators here that we had for many years was Bill Nelson. He was an astronaut that went up. I honestly don't know if he went to the moon or not, but he was up in space many, many times, and he never went on like, oh, like poor me, I was the, you know, the 30th person, or I was, you know, it still was just, I got to go into space. You know, he appreciated the magnitude of that.
Yes.
Instead of just being like, oh, woe is me, I was the second. Suck it up, Buttercup.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got to do it.
I just...
Am I going to get to do it? No.
But maybe you will, Dawn. You're young. And your children probably most definitely will, as things move on quite quickly with regard to Elon Musk's endeavors. Let's talk about some endeavors. The new president, oh gosh, here I am doing segues. The new president of the United States, Joe Biden. Now, this is interesting because I think this headline from Yahoo News in America, first major tax hike since 1993. This is going to be fodder for the Republicans, is it not?
Oh, yes. They will.
They'll eat this for breakfast.
They will. They will have a field day with it, and they will complain about it until the end of time. But because it's going to affect them. The tax hike is only going to affect large corporations, people who make over $1 million. It's only affecting the wealthy and large corporations, and it's going to raise estate taxes some, and you know, things that average people, the normal middle class and lower class, it's not going to affect them. It's going to affect the wealthy, and you know, the big corporations are going to have problems with it, and those are who the Republicans don't want to upset.
Well, yes, and I was just saying
those are their bread and butter, and you know, the people who lobby for them, that's so they're not going to want to have, they're not going to want to take the money out of their own pockets, but it's needed because that large $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill just passed.
Yes, that's a lot of money.
It is. But it's going to do a lot of wonderful things for a lot of people. And with that, these tax hikes are expected to bring in $2.1 trillion.
And
in the next 10 years. So that is going to far and away pay for that COVID bill and help fund the economy for a long time. So even if a Republican gets in the next term or two terms, God forbid they don't, but hopefully they won't be able to screw things up so much that they take us down into a huge recession again. Because Biden's doing what he can to try to pull us out. Trump left us with a big mess.
Yeah, and the corporate tax rate, and I presume that is the top 5 or 10% of earners in America.
It is.
From 21 to 28% is quite a jump. It's quite a jump, isn't it?
It is.
If you think in terms of the millions of dollars, billions of dollars they already get, and pay so little tax, so this is probably a good thing.
It is. They have so many lawyers that work to find every loophole they can so that they pay as little as humanly possible. Even with the tax rate going up to 28% for them, if it passes all the way through, they still have to find 10 Republicans when they get to the Senate for it to pass. Unless he does an executive order and just signs it into law, it's going to have a big fight to get through. And if it does, corporate lawyers are going to be able to nickel and dime this to death. So that I doubt a lot of those large corporations are still going to get close to that 28%. They will find ways to avoid it.
What I'm interested to know is how Fox News will handle this. I mean, how can they paint this at this point? Without, you know, they would literally have to lie in terms of who is being taxed. And they're very good at this, aren't they, Dawn? They seem to be able to paint a picture, even if it's untrue picture.
I'm sure they will start to say that, they're going to start taxing your bank, or they're going to start taxing your phone company, and because of that, they're going to raise your rates. And they will find ways to say, well, they're going to get taxed, so then they're not going to be able to pay your health insurance if you work for them. I can think of a million ways they'll spin it.
And so can they.
none of it's going to be true. And I think they already know that this is how it's going to be, because Vice President Kamala Harris and First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden, are on a, just started a tour together across the nation.
That's interesting.
To go to hard hit areas where a lot of the COVID relief money is going to go to start talking to minorities that are struggling with wanting to take the vaccine in the first place because they're weary of it, but as well as going into communities and telling them how the money that's coming in is going to help them because they're trying to use some of this money to get children out of poverty.
And if they're going into rural areas, they're going to be talking to many people who supported Trump and still probably do. I mean,
so they're trying to say, this is what we're doing and this is how it's going to positively impact you. And I think it's fantastic that the First Lady and the Vice President are doing this together. I'm so amazed and I'm proud to see that for once we have a First Lady. After what we've had for the last 4 years, we have a First Lady who's going out and is talking coherently, that is educated and is not plagiarizing someone else's speech and can answer questions when asked. And it's just so refreshing and amazing.
I was thinking of the word refreshing because it really is. We've had 4 years. When I say we, the whole world has had 4 years of Trump. It hasn't just been the United States of America. And it is refreshing word.
I know what happens to us does affect everybody. It really does. So I am really, I am so sorry.
Are you?
I was not impacted. You know, I didn't vote for him. Obviously, everyone knows I vomited when the election got called. It's just so nice. I'm optimistic for the first time time about
it. That was my next question. Do you feel optimistic? Do you feel like there's a massive turnaround going on in North America now?
I do. I mean, obviously there still is. The Trump base is still the Trump base.
70 million
plus. And
that
is going to be a problem. But every time Biden speaks, he makes a point to say, when he says, I'm a president for red states and blue states, I'm a president. He always says the red states first. He always tries to emphasize that I am a president for you. He always wants to include them first.
It's called inclusion. It's as against exclusion.
And division. He's trying to bring everybody together. And again, it's still only been, 6 weeks, 7 weeks? And this has been, I mean, we've gotten a $1.9 trillion bill passed. We're doing close to 2 million vaccines a day.
And I noticed that Dow Jones is way up and the markets are buzzing. I mean, they really are. And
we've had here in Orlando, FEMA has come in and set up 3 different vaccination sites just in Orlando you can just walk up and get your shot. They have 2 different shots. I'm getting my shot. I was able to, because of my health problems.
Yes.
I qualified for the extreme vulnerability. I'm getting my first shot on Friday.
And are you AstraZeneca?
I'm getting Moderna.
Moderna, and it's 2 shots.
It's 2 shots.
So are you excited? Is there a sense of freedom?
Freedom? Well, I wish I could have gotten it sooner. I mean, after the second one, I have stuff growing in my lungs now, but I'm still excited. Glad that I'm the only adult in the house that hasn't been vaccinated. So,
because you got the 2 kids, they've been vaccinated, your boyfriend and your mother all vaccinated.
Yes. So I want to be able to protect the kids as much as I can. My daughter with her epilepsy.
Yes.
My thoughts are always with the kids and how I want to be sure I can protect them too.
And we got to go soon. I just want to ask you finally regarding holiday season. Obviously Orlando, where you are, and Florida is a place of theme parks. The first question is, are they opening? And the second question
they
is,
are opening.
How is Easter going to be for you guys? But first, these places are opening. Are they being responsible?
They are open. They are limiting the amount of people who can go in a day. If you try to go to the parks, you have to make reservations. Mm. You have to sign up and say that you want to go certain days so that they cut it off and say, nope, we've reached capacity. You cannot come.
And are people flocking? Are people really like determined to get out there and have a bit of fun again?
Yes. Yes, they are. Okay. And as for Easter, which is the next one coming up, it's spring break. Yeah. In our area right now, we're not really doing anything.
And if you've just joined us, I just want to let people know that I'm talking to Don Drost in Orlando, Florida, in the United States. Spring break. I've seen stories, and of course, it is hot in Florida most of the year.
Yes.
And a lot of these kiddies, you know, when I say kiddies, I'm talking about, you know, late teens, early 20s, are out there. And no self-distancing at all. Is that true still? Or is anyone learning anything in that state? As in your governor?
I don't think so. I think that's why Texas and Mississippi cut all of their restrictions, is because they wanted people to go for spring break and flock to the beaches. A lot of the beaches, yeah, we're open. Everything here is open. And our governor largely shut down. He told them people could fully open, but places I've gone, they no longer have mask restrictions. I know the theme parks are still requiring social distancing and mask restrictions. Stores I've gone into, like today, we had a plumbing problem. Our kitchen faucet broke, so I had to go to the hardware store and get a new one. They still had marks for social distancing in line to pay.
Yes.
And
did you wear a mask?
Staff is still wearing a mask. I wear a mask everywhere I go. As soon as I
but
get,
you don't have to, is that right?
I don't have to, but I do. It's for my protection as well as everybody else's.
Oh, yeah.
I know I
absolutely
have it.
Yeah.
So I have. It's just to be safe. I mean, I don't know. I can say I am going to Disney World in April. I have friends coming from California, and we are going to the Disney parks for a couple of days. This will be the first time I have gone in about 18 months.
Yes.
And
gosh.
I will talk about it. I want to talk about it on the air so that I can tell you what it's like after I have been inside.
I can't
because
wait.
I am curious about how it's going to be. I'm nervous to go, but I am excited because I know that I will be fully vaccinated when I go.
Yes.
But I'm still apprehensive about it because I'm going to be touching, you know, I don't know how frequently they're going to be cleaning the rides, and I will be touching things, getting in and out of stuff that lots of other people have touched.
Yes. And look, if you do this safely, you know, you've got to break out and start trying some normalcy again, as long as it is safe.
Yeah.
Dawn, thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk again soon.
Yes, thank you so much. It was wonderful to chat with you.
That's Dawn Drost in Orlando, Florida. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
Henry O'Donovan.
Bondi Tunes has correspondents from all around the world. And now we cross to Declan Hughes in Dublin.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting from Australia. I'm Henry in Sydney and we're joined by Declan Hughes, our Europe correspondent in Dublin. Welcome to the show, Declan.
Thanks very much, Henry.
Right, now, it's been a while since we talked. Just very briefly, I'm sort of trying to avoid coronavirus this week and politics, but just very briefly, how's it going in Ireland and around Europe?
Well, Ireland's death rate was down to zero for the island of Ireland twice over the last few days as we record this. So the big problem with the Irish situation with regard to coronavirus north and south of the border has been the infection rate was spiked recently due to the variants and people coming into Northern Ireland and the Republic from places like Brazil and indeed the mainland UK, as they like to call it, because of the Kent variant. But the situation is getting under control. The big problem in the Republic at the moment is supply. There's been two issues with one of the companies. One of the companies that is producing the Oxford University developed virus, AstraZeneca.
Yes.
They had a fire in a factory in Belgium, and the supplies to the EU have been nothing short of disgraceful, far less than were promised. And they cut back again recently. But there's been a recent scare with that virus in continental Europe with regards to producing blood clots. So in the Republic, they have ceased issuing that vaccine for the moment until further results have been. So that exacerbates the situation. For example, in my own situation, I'm in what's called a vulnerable group. I've got a heart condition. So I'd be next in line after the elderly are done. And I've no idea at this point in time when I'm going to get vaccinated.
Yes, and interesting you mentioned
AstraZeneca.
Thank you. It's interesting because here in Australia, that's a big hoo-ha at the moment amongst our government, who are saying just because Europe, most of Europe seems to have stopped using this or paused it, why should we with the blood clot situation And our scientists actually agree with the government, and they're saying, why should we, you know, we don't have enough proof of this. We're making our own version of this of this as well. So it remains to be seen how much proof there will come of it. But it's interesting that Europe is being, I guess, quite careful about this.
Yeah, well, I think it's a numbers game as much as anything else. Like, the EU is a population just under 500 million. Mm. Australia's population is around 30 million. If you notice a couple of things, you can stop it very, very easily. We have a huge order list for this particular vaccine. When I say we, I mean the EU, have a huge order list for this particular vaccine from the company. And if there is an issue with it, we'll have to get sources elsewhere. Ironically, Joe Biden is apparently sitting on millions of vaccines that he doesn't know what to do with. So we have to wait and see. We have to wait and see what's happening there. Because apparently the one-dose vaccines that have been issued to the United States have proved to be as efficacious as the two-dose vaccines. So there's a lot of these second doses still around there, if you know what I mean.
Yep, okay. Now, look, it's interesting because it's an ongoing situation. I want to talk about St. Patrick's Day. In fact, this day last year, Facebook reminded me that we did actually put a promo out of you and me talking about St. Patrick's Day. And by the time we go to air, St. Patrick's Day will have happened because we're not live. But it's interesting to talk to you again about this. And firstly, just as a segue, with regard to the virus, St. Patrick's Day will have parades or no in Ireland?
Virtual parades. There will be no public displays. The RTE, the national broadcaster, had planned for the national holiday to have, there's a special Late Late Show going out on St. Patrick's Day, which is a Wednesday, unusual for them. There's another show, which is kind of like an afternoon show, is going early at 1 o'clock. And it said there'll be virtual parades. In other words, you'll see people, shall we say, organizing a parade, but there won't be anybody watching it, but there'll be a television camera looking at it, if you know what I mean. Hmm. So that's what they're trying to do, but it's going to be in smaller places. They won't be in big cities. It'll be in small towns. They'll have a parade down the main street, filmed by a camera, and that'll be shown to the nation. That's the sort of idea they're going with.
Not in Dublin?
Not in Dublin, as far as I know.
Wow. It just seems bizarre to me. I don't know why they couldn't do it in Dublin. Like, if they can do it in small towns.
We've had a lot of trouble with anti-vaccine protesters in Dublin lately. I think it's a security issue from the police standpoint, and they're not having it, basically. At the moment in Dublin, we have a 5 kilometre travel limit. And if you're traveling more than 5 kilometres, you've got to have a very good reason when you're stopped by a policeman if you're driving your car. I travel everywhere by bus, and I have a letter in my phone from the radio station saying I'm on radio station business, which more or less gives me carte blanche to go wherever I like.
Yeah, it's gosh. Okay, so look, for our listeners around the world, just explain, because there's a lot of confusion over St. Patrick and snakes. What's the story with St. Patrick's Day?
Well, the snake story is a complete myth, because the actual truth is there never were any snakes in Ireland. Ireland didn't come out of the ooze of water and muck and whatever else there was when the reptiles were being distributed to Great Britain, which at the time was connected to the so-called the main continent. England, if you look at the world is like a jigsaw puzzle. England was connected to northern France when the reptiles were being given out, whereas we were still underwater. And as the reptiles that populated England couldn't swim, when we came out of the water, they couldn't get across, because Ireland had moved away from Britain physically in the days of... I'm sure you've heard places like Gondwanaland mentioned, where all the continents were kind of stuck together. This is very early...
it's a long time ago.
Yeah, so we're talking about very, very early on. I mean, there wouldn't have been anything remotely resembling a human being on the planet at the time. Anyway, so that story is a myth. What we do know about St. Patrick is largely from writings that survived, which are called St. Patrick's Breastplate. Apparently, he was born in Wales and his father was a Roman soldier. He was kidnapped by one of our more enterprising high kings, Niall of the Nine Hostages, who used to kidnap people but not in this regularity, hold them to ransom and then give back the people once he'd gotten whatever he wanted, whether it was cattle or sheep or whatever it was. And he was one of those people kidnapped, and he was forced to work as a farm labourer somewhere in County Down, if rumour has it correctly. And he basically spent his time minding sheep on a mountainside. for this farmer. He eventually escaped, talked his way onto a boat, and got back to Wales. Got a vocation, became a priest, and decided he had a nice vision that the Creator was telling him to go to Ireland and convert to Christianity. Now, as we've since discovered, it turns out there was a small Christian community in Ireland anyway. They were living in a coastal village somewhere before he got here. But when he got here, he found them. I believe they linked up and they spread the word of the Lord, so to speak, around the place. And again, this is piecing together several histories to form a continuous narrative that might make some sense to your listeners. And apparently that was with the spread of Christianity. Ironically, in 1169, when William the Conqueror's successor, decided he wanted to spread his evil deeds further afield than the Great British, the island of Great Britain. He contacted the Pope and said, "I want to go and convert the Irish to Christianity." And the Pope more or less said, "Off you go." So the invasion of Ireland in 1169, even though Dermot McMurrough, the King of Leinster, invited the guys to come over and help him win a scrap, was largely down to a lie being told about Ireland not already being Christian. So so basically 762 years of misery, Henry, was down to a lie.
And he wasn't Irish.
Yeah, he wasn't Irish at all, no.
Thank you.
Now, if you just joined us, I'm talking with Declan Hughes, our Europe correspondent in Dublin. I put up a post on Facebook and other social media outlets about the fact that the internet has allowed people like me and people of my age group to be the first generation of people who could reconnect with people we haven't seen for 20 or even 30 years ago. 30 years ago, people in their 50s, like myself and Declan here, could not have done this if they hadn't seen someone in 20 or 30 years, which would have been the 60s or whatever. We can. And, you know, we've reconnected with people from 20 or 30 years ago. And this fascinates me because I have made contact with you and so many other people that I actually did know from boarding school in the 1970s. If we didn't have social media and the internet, I wouldn't know anything about these people. I'd never hear about them or from them again. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have a similar situation to you. We returned to Ireland from Canada, as you mentioned, the province of Quebec, Montreal, my favorite other city in the world after the one I live in. We returned from there in 1971. And I was in pen pal contact with one of my classmates for another 6 or 7 years. And then in the 1978-79 academic year, I think I was doing my Leaving Cert that year. You were either doing your Leaving Cert or you were in fifth year, one or the other.
Mm.
It was a postal strike.
It was 1980.
So you were in fifth year this particular year.
Mm, okay.
There was a postal strike.
Well, let me just get this right. Were you a year ahead? Because you're the same age as me.
I was a year ahead of you academically. Yeah, I did my Leaving in 79.
You smart dude.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I think our school only had 5 years in secondary school, and I got in early. So, but anyways, okay. Thanks to this postal strike, and also my friend in my old school in Montreal had moved house during the same period. I lost contact with him, and that was it. That was my last contact with Montreal, gone in the spring of 79.
Hmm.
I went on to university and I had 2 years of unemployment. It was Ireland in the 80s after all.
Yes.
And then I got into the civil service and I worked on for so many years, never having any contact with this guy. In the meantime, this guy had gone on to university, been sent to a university in the States. And the only reason I know all this is because I subsequently met him, but I have to explain how that happened in a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he met an American who was a Jehovah's Witness, and he converted to Jehovah's Witnesses, and he lives now in a place called Oshawa in Ontario. Now, bear in mind, I was oblivious to any of this up to the year 2009. In 2008, I went to Montreal for the first time since I left it 37 years earlier. I found an old phone book, and I looked up another guy that I was trying to trace. And I found a person with the same initial and surname as him. And I jotted down the phone number in my diary and took it home with me and thought nothing more of it.
Hmm.
I had found a website in 2008, which was used by USA people to find people that they were in school with. So it had every state of the union and whatever schools were up there. And it seemed to be predominantly high schools. And as I didn't go to high school over there, I said, right, I look up the high school in Montreal that I know that this guy that I lost contact with went to and see if I can find anybody. And I went down through all these states of the union and I got to, I think it was Wyoming, I think is the last one. And then there was more. There was Canadian provinces. So this is amazing. So I went down, I went to the province of Quebec and I went looking for the high school that these guys went to. I couldn't find the high school. I kept scrolling down. The high school was called Marymount. And the primary school I went to was called St. Richards. St. Richards was on the list. I clicked on the page. There was five people from the class I was in and two names I recognized.
Wow.
One was the guy I eventually contacted called Carl. And the other one was a young lady called Michelle that had left the school the year before we returned to Ireland. She moved to Newfoundland in 1970. Mm-hmm. And I've been in email and telephone contact with her intermittently over the number of years.
Mm.
Carl, I left a message for Carl. Carl eventually got back to me. And in 2008, when I was in Montreal, I phoned Carl. We had a conversation. I jogged his memory, and he eventually remembered me, and he checked me out with a few of his friends, and they all said, yeah, we remember him. So anyways, the plan with Carl was I was going to return to Montreal in 2009 and meet him in person. He couldn't meet me at the time I was there in 2008. One of his parents had a health issue, and his father subsequently passed away. So anyway, I found Carl, and I had this phone number for Albert, as I thought. So I went back home to Ireland. Now, in February of 2019, I had booked a return trip to Montreal and Toronto in the spring of 2019. Actually, St. Patrick's Week, as it turned out. Mm. I was going to be spending most of my time in Toronto, though.
Yeah.
I get a contact from Michelle. She's trying to find one of the girls that was in our class. It was a mixed school. And I said, okay, I'll check in with Carl, see if he knows how to contact her. So I had a conversation with Carl. It went something like this. Carl said, I said, Carl, I'm trying to find Maria Turchetto for one of our ex-classmates. She says, oh, my mother goes to church with her parents. I'll get you a contact.
Yeah.
So the contact number is duly produced. I ring Maria Turchetto's parents. They claim they remember me, which is phenomenal. Mm. And they said, of course we'll give you her number. No problem. We'd be delighted for you two guys to reconnect. I rang Maria Turchetto on a Friday. I remember it was about 4 weeks before I was due to travel. So it would have been about the 13th to 14th of February. Mm. I hung up on her an hour and a half later, having caught up. I passed on her number to Michelle Cantwell. I thought nothing more about it for about an hour or two. Then I found the phone number that I'd written for this guy whose initial and surname tallied mine. I said, the stars seem to be in alignment because I've just reconnected Maria with Michelle. Why didn't I do myself a favor and try and find Albert? So I rang the number. It wasn't Albert, it was his cousin. His cousin didn't have a number for Albert, but he had a number for Albert's sister. That's good enough for me.
I love it.
I ring Albert's sister. Now, Albert's sister was the oldest member of the family. She was working most of the time. I would pal around. Now, just to put things in context for our listenership, I lived in an apartment block that had railway tracks behind it. And Albert lived over the level crossing on the other side of the track. So he was very, very close to me geographically.
Wow.
When we were living in Montreal. And we used to spend a lot of time together outside school time in the holidays and so on. And got very close for the 3 years that we lived in the same area as him. Mm. I rang the sister. The sister remembered me. And I barely remembered seeing the sister more than about three times. So she said, of course I'll put you in touch with him. He's living in Toronto now. Now, bear in mind, I've already booked a trip to Toronto to meet somebody else, right?
Yeah.
I ring him. We had a great conversation, and we arranged to meet when I was in Montreal at a restaurant across the street from my favorite hotel in the downtown the city. Turns out he was living in the city as well. He was living in the city center, so where I was planning to meet him was a short walk away. And I happened to mention to him, I said, have you any way of contacting Neil? I said, I used to write letters to him for ages, and I couldn't, I lost contact. I explained the postal strike, the whole thing. He says, I bump into Neil's brother from time to time. I'll see what I can do. I said, well, Neil's brother's more than welcome to turn up as well. He's welcome too. So what happened was, through Neil's brother, Neil arrived at the venue on the day. So I met Neil, who I hadn't heard from since 1979. I met Albert, who I hadn't seen since or heard from since 1971. I met Neil's brother, who I hadn't seen since 1971. And we had a reunion dinner in Toronto across the street from my hotel. This was all done to suit me, by the way. Mm. And we posted photographs on my Facebook page.
Yes.
Carl is watching all this from Montreal because I connected with Carl on Facebook. Carl sets up a page for the old school and he gets loads and loads of members. We had about 62 or 65 members on the page at one point. Mm. And next thing I know, Carl has organized a reunion dinner in June of 2009 for as many people as possible from not only the primary school, but also the secondary school, the high school, Marymount. So anyways, I decided to go back for it. And I met Albert. I met three of his brothers. And lots of people were there. And we met Maria Turchetto and all these other people. And it was just an amazing experience. And now every year, when I go back to Montreal, and I haven't been there since 2017 for a variety of reasons, but when I start going back again, I'll be meeting some, if not all, of these people again. And it's been a great thing. I've scratched the itch. I have phone numbers for a lot of the people. I phone them regularly. I keep in touch with them. And it's been an absolute enrichment of my own personal life. It's literally scratched an itch. And shortly after I reconnected with these people, my dad went into an old folks home and passed away. So it's to have this reconnection with a part of my life that I thought was lost forever. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without the internet, and particularly that school reunion website. That was phenomenal.
With regard to the fact that you connect with these people after so many years, if not decades, you're going to come up with some strange stories, Declan. Like, would you agree with that? Like, you know, maybe people have had tragedies. As you mentioned off air, they could have been mass murders.
Yeah, well, I found a guy who's had a lot of tragedy in his life, who now lives on the west coast of Canada. I won't mention any names in case he's listening to this.
Yeah.
But I think finding me has helped him deal with a few of the problems he's had, and I'm certainly pleased to have found him. Now, in the time I've known him, there's been a couple of things that I would have considered upsetting if they happened to me that have happened to him as well. And like, you know, he's gotten divorced since I reconnected with him as well, for one example. And his lovely dog, absolute gorgeous chocolate Labrador, passed away. I mean, that was inevitable given the age of the dog. But, you know, these are things that hit people and affect them very, very badly. And I had the pleasure of meeting the dog and adored it. It was love at first sight in my case with the dog. I love Labradors anyway, but this particular animal took to me like a duck to water. It was an absolutely had a lovely personality, if we can attribute that phrase to a dog. A great character.
Oh yes, and, I think you can attribute that to a dog.
I got very attached to the dog in like 10 minutes. You know,
what do you think, Declan? Like, if you do contact someone who you haven't spoken to or, you know, known for decades, and do you ever find that you've got nothing in common? Because, of course, in my case, I know a lot of people in the school that I went to, which was a boarding school in the west of Ireland, in Limerick. And they, you know, everyone's changed. A lot of them have had children. But what if you find someone who, you know, you say, oh, look, you know, do you remember this? Do you remember we used to play hockey and all that sort of stuff? And then you've had all this conversation, and because your lives have gone in such different directions, not only psychologically, but geographically, in my case, Australia. And then after you've had that initial conversation, you ain't got nothing to talk about.
Yeah, but I mean, at least you've ticked that particular box. You've answered that question. I wonder what happened to Henry O'Donovan. Yes. I wonder what happened to whatever your school friend's name is. And at least you can then shut that door and move on. You're not wondering anymore whatever became
That's
of
a good
Jerry
point.
Smith, whatever his name is.
You don't have to be best friends like you were at the age of 15. Yeah.
Yeah, but what you have done is you've patched a little hole in your knowledge. You put the polyfill on top of it, and now you can paint the wall again and move on if you have to.
And move on, yeah. But I just want to get back to the fact that a lot of people, I mean, there are people I cannot contact or can't get hold of on any of these new mediums, such as, you know, Twitter and Facebook, simply because they just never got into it. And I think that's a bit sad because, you know, the first thing you want to do if you're our age is to find people from, you know, all those years ago, Declan.
Well, I made friends, funnily enough, with three people the first week I was in university. I was 17. Now, bear in mind, three weeks later, my mother passed away.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And I'm still in regular contact with two of those people to this day. I've lost touch with one of them. I could probably find him if I tried hard enough. Because he's got a law practice in Limerick, I could probably find him. Mm. And that might be my to-do list for 2021. Find this guy.
There's got to be a way. Okay, Declan.
I last saw him at a funeral of the father of a mutual friend about 15 years ago. He came up to Dublin for it. So it's not that long since I spoke to him. But like I said, I could probably find him if I ironically, if we still had phone books, I'd probably find him easier.
That is ironic when you think about it, but we don't. Okay, Declan, we're over time. Thank you so much for joining me here on Bondi Tunes International once again.
You're very welcome, Henry.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.